Do you want your products seen by more buyers on Amazon, Etsy, and other marketplaces? Do you want to get more traffic, make more sales, and scale your brand? Welcome to the Signalytics Podcast, Signal Code Unlocked, where we discuss what signals are needed to send to your customers, to the algorithms, to the ad platforms, in order to get your product seen, converting, and profiting fast. With your host, former top 50 seller on all of Amazon, the Professor Howard Tai. This is the Signalytics Podcast, Signal Code Unlocked.
Hello and welcome, guys, for the today's session. And thank you so much, Destiny, for taking out your time and joining us today.
Very happy to be here.
I was just talking about how hard it is to find Destiny because she doesn't reply. You have to keep on DMing her and making sure to see if she says hello and stuff. She's one of the hardest person I bet you in the industry to find.
I just want to feel needed, Howard. I need a few messages from you and then I'm ready to go.
Okay, awesome. So, Destiny, we would like to hear some of your background. Like, how did you start your Amazon journey?
Yeah, of course. So Destiny Washan from Better AMS. I got started in Amazon advertising 6 years ago, I think. It's been a while. I got started working on the 1P side. So I was working with a lot of really large vendors. That was how I was able to learn really quickly, is because I was thrown into a lot of situations with really high spend and just figuring things out. And I have not stopped doing Amazon ads since. So since it's my primary focus, I can go really deep on a lot of concepts and I don't really manage any other aspects of the business. So that's where we are now.
Awesome. Great. So let's jump on to today's topic. Like, how do you handle the PPC? What is the best way to do it?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we've seen lately, and I would love to hear your all's opinion on this, because I know you all handle the ranking side incredibly well, but Amazon has just oversaturated page one with ads. So when anyone types in their top keywords, you see a headline search ad, 4 sponsored product ads, 4 organic placements, and then the rest is just editorial recommendations, video inserts, sponsored, climate friendly, all of these things. So I think we're seeing a crazy change, like tacos is increasing slightly if you're not in the top of the page. Terms of service changes have made things a little bit more complex and people are just spending more money on ads. So we've really had to start focusing on things like conversion rate and volume and the factors that are a little bit out of our control in order to make PPC more successful.
All right, great. So like, what is your strategy for the ranking if we talk about specifically for the PPC?
Yeah, the key things that we look at is driving high volume, higher volume than the rest of your competitors, and then converting really, really well relative to your category. So kind of just breaking down the algorithm in a really, really simple way, Amazon doesn't want to show ads to people who don't want to buy those products. So if your ad doesn't have high click-through rate, high conversion rate, they're not going to show it. So what we really focus on doing is typically running really high volume, top of search, sponsor product ads, sponsor brand ads, and then analyzing the conversion for those exact match keywords. And then comparing that with things like search query performance and brand metrics to make sure we're converting better than the category.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so great. There are too many sellers in here, Pakistan, who actually have launched low price products. Like the price point is $6, $7, or up to $10. So how do you handle those products in which you have very thin profit margins?
Yeah, I think that there's two things that really need to happen. One, expectations probably need to change because you're not going to be able to compete at top of search and be profitable at the same time. So we're having to do that math of if you're paying $3 a click and you only have a 20% conversion rate, you're not going to be profitable. But back in the old days, for the people like the professor and Baldwin, like when we all used to run ranking campaigns using external sources, we set aside budget for rank. We said, hey, here's $5,000 for search, find, buy, giveaway, whatever. Here's the budget to spend. PPC should probably be viewed in the same way. If you're creating ranking campaigns, you need to set aside budget to focus on rank and make sure that your taco slowly improves over time. If that expectation is out the window and they're like, no, I don't want to spend that and I can't afford it for top of search, then you're going to have to look at doing, you know, more longer tail keyword targeting. You're going to have to look at more product targeting and a lot of those cheaper placements, but you're not going to be able to rank near as quick. because you're going to have to drive that volume over extended period of time because there's such low search volume for those placements.
Okay, so in addition to that, there are so many sellers who has chosen the product with the very, very, you can say, low number of keywords as well. Like they have the thin profit margins and the keywords are really low. Like they have totally around 10 to 15 keywords. So how do you handle that then?
I typically see that there's more keywords than people think. Even in super, super, super precise categories, there's ways that you can extend a lot of your keyword research and get really long tail. Again, just know your search volume is going to be a lot lower, but you can still expand into those areas. Another thing you can do is just run product targeting. So for any one keyword, there's typically 50 products that you can make sure you're targeting and taking advantage of all the external traffic they're driving and their organic ranks. So that's something we really want to look at. But I don't think I've ever seen a category with less than at least 500 keywords that you could bid on.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Baldwin, what's your take on it?
Well, it seems like the industry has changed a lot where you kind of have to brute force it, right? Top of search, usually whoever has the most budget wins out at the end. What do you feel like? Is that the direction where Amazon is going, where it's like whoever has the most money wins?
I think that's a much bigger part of it than ever than before. Even if we look at some of the new things Amazon's rolling out, they're focusing on brand building. So the new influencer platform where you can work directly with influencers, sponsor brands, custom image, sponsor display, custom image, more DSP, off-platform video and search ads. All of those really give priority to the people who have a brand. And typically the people that are like building a brand have more money and they have more longer term expectations. And I think what it came down to is Amazon values their customers. We've always known that that's like their number one focus. And they don't want a bunch of knockoff terrible products on the platform. They have all of the customer base now. They don't need anything and everything. They need the best of everything. So they're really starting to focus on those brands who have that loyalty and the opportunity to spend, because that's where they're making all their money.
When you're saying the influencers Amazon's bringing in to connect with the sellers, you're talking about what you just recently posted about the creator connections, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. I couldn't remember the name.
I follow you. if you didn't know, on a side note, like in Pakistan, you're very popular as well.
Aw. Well, that's a kind thing. I'm very excited about that.
Is that why she's here?
Yeah, so there are too many people following you. And I would say, like, there are so many people who are fans. Like, they really love your content. They really love the value you are putting. And we do respect that. And we do appreciate that for being in the industry and just giving the value.
Well, that's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Anytime I can get back and help, like, this industry is a little crazy right now. So without a community, it'd be impossible to succeed.
Yeah. So I would like to know also that how Amazon is changing like too quick. Like if we see the recent changes on, especially on the PPC, there are too many things coming out from Amazon.
Yep.
So how do you learn those things too quickly? So because people over here are like, they are learning something and then the change or a new update pops up and they started learning that. So how do you actually do that?
So I want to answer that question, but I want to start with something else first. And that's, there are so many shiny objects in our space. And I post all the new and shiny content because it's a lot of what our team does. We work for a lot of large brands and that little stuff makes a big difference. And my team only manages Amazon ads, so it's really easy to log into the platform every day and find these new things. But for everyone who's just starting out and who's really starting to understand ads, I would say just don't get distracted by it all. At the end of the day, from the beginning, when all four of us on this call started managing, you know, 6 to 10 years ago, the basics of PPC are still bid management and keyword research. That's what's going to make you successful. Sponsored brands is exciting and it helps and we could drive an additional 20% sales. Sponsored display is really fun. We've now seen just in the last week, I think we've seen auto campaign bid suggestions by holiday. We've seen add to cart data. We've seen video and search expansion, all of these fun and shiny things. But at the end of the day, for a new person, that doesn't matter. Get really good at keyword research, get really good at bid management, and then understanding the correlation between your conversion rate and your success. And that's what's going to drive long-term value for you.
All right, good.
I think there's this new thing that's coming out or is rolling out about the add to cart and brand searches and cumulative reach.
Yeah.
For under the advertising console side.
Yep.
Have we seen that, Bono, Destiny?
Yeah, actually that information is super valuable. So it's exciting to see.
I'm super excited for it. We've had it for 48 hours and the actual data hasn't hit. So part of me is wondering if it's tied to Sponsored Brands OTT. So maybe because we are starting a test campaign there. So I'm curious if those metrics were added just for that, since the metrics are kind of like DSP metrics. So for those who don't know, on the DSP side, you have all the audience data you could ever want. You have, you know, how long they watched your video, add to car, when they left, all this. We're starting to get some of it on the sponsored ad side. So I think it's really exciting for the future of ads because the more data we have, the better we can tell the story.
Bon, do you have anything you want to ask?
Yeah, so speaking of DSP, what do you think about those who do run DSP ads and display ads? Would you recommend overlapping? Would you recommend doing the same or not doing the same, both at the same time?
Yeah, kind of. I know, like, if you're working with a very advanced agency like one of us, we will help segment and make sure that there's not a lot of overlap. But a lot of agencies sell DSP as just a way to increase their retainer, and they end up running only remarketing. And then that remarketing doesn't actually increase top line sales, and it can be ran under sponsored display. So we recommend running product targeting under sponsored display. We usually recommend running remarketing under DSP because we can get more granular and we can segment our audiences a little bit deeper. But the problem with DSP is you typically need some type of minimum. So if you have 300 SKUs, only do your top 5 SKUs on DSP, get really granular, and then use sponsored display to run the rest. So that way you have better control of your budget.
That makes sense.
Okay. So for the newbie, what would you recommend to learn about the DSP?
I would probably not play around too much with it. In all honesty, I think that there's a lot of like misinformation in the space, and I don't think DSP makes sense for a lot of brands. The easiest way I use to segment it is sponsored ads are for a customer to come to you. They're typing in the keyword that's going to bring them to your page. They are already wanting to buy you. They're just trying to find you. The real value in DSP is going out and getting your customers. It's saying, hey, I want to target someone between this age range and this category who's viewed my competitors. Let's go out and get them and tell them that they need my product. So with that, there comes different goals and expectations. It's typically a lower ROAS. You're typically moving up the funnel. And a lot of that doesn't make sense for small brands with limited budgets.
Okay. So what do you recommend? Like, what should be a brand to go for the DSP? Like, is it on the sales side or is it on the SKU side?
What was that question?
What is the requirement for a brand to go into DSP?
So on Amazon Zen, it's typically like a $35,000 minimum, 3-month commitment, anything like that. And they typically say, hey, high price points or highly remarketable products, anything that can be bought multiple times, supplements, trash bags, all that type of thing. On the agency side, I think we have much lower commitments. I'd be curious to hear what your thresholds are. We typically look for a minimum of like $8,000 in spend for a couple of SKUs. And then we want to make sure we have a high price point and remarketing as well.
Yeah, on our side, we've started taking on smaller clients where they're not getting as much traction they should be or can. Because we've been doing more middle of the funnel things like awareness to drive traffic to the listing. and making sure that their listings are optimized so that they can convert.
Do you feel like you have to do a lot of educating brands? Because sometimes I'm like, oh, I want a $5 ROAS on this. And I'm like, oh, no, no way.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, remarketing is awesome because you can show off the high numbers or you can have like 15 to 20 ROAS. But when there's a client or a brand that comes to you and they don't have the traffic that they need, yeah, you gotta kind of educate them to let them know, look, we're not gonna see the high ROAS. We can do remarketing, but you don't have enough traffic into your listing in order for it to be effective.
That makes sense. That's a lot of what I feel like is on our end.
So, like, do you recommend using any AI tool for the PPC management? Like, I can see here in Pakistan, like, there are very, very few people who are using the AI tool. Most of them are like managing by the Excel and the bulk files. So do you recommend that?
No, not necessarily. I think ad tools are needed 100%. I think both of our agencies have built their own ad tech tools. And that's what allows us to scale really efficiently. I think that once you get into anyone that's playing around with like AI, and I don't think there's really such thing as AI in our space per se. It's all the same API. We're getting the same data and just making adjustments, really. I think that ad tech tools can be really important, but they need to do two things. They need to showcase the data in a way that Advertising Console does not, so that way you can better visualize your account. But at the end of the day, it's still bid management, keyword research, negating keywords, and campaign launches. So almost all the ad tech does something really similar. So if you're trying to run, you know, advertising for 500 SKUs and you don't know how to use bulk, ad tech's going to be super important for you. Anyone who tries to manage bids completely by hand for more than 10 SKUs is probably letting a lot fall through the cracks.
Valvin, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I totally agree. Doing bulk files is kind of like you're wasting a lot of time, I feel, just by looking at the spreadsheets and stuff like that. While you can have a system that actually manages your bids, manages your keyword negation, and doing your exploratory keyword harvesting. The problem is that when you're doing bulk files, you don't really have time to concentrate on the launching side that you should really pay attention to. That's probably where most of the attention is going to, looking at your launches and having your PPC automated.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. So nowadays, the most probably the hot topic is the PPC for the Prime Day.
Oh,
how do you
we have 26 days. That announcement was made yesterday within the app. Like, our largest brands didn't know about it, which is kind of funny because everyone's just sitting here scrambling. Biggest suggestions I have on my end is last year we saw the week before Prime Day be some of the worst performance we've ever seen in Amazon advertising history. That being said, we don't recommend making a lot of changes because what people are typically doing is window shopping and adding to cart and then waiting until Prime Day to purchase. So you may be getting a lot of clicks and no sales. That's fine because people are leading up. So not making any crazy drastic changes is probably one of my recommendations. And then on the strategic side, Amazon's putting a lot more focus on anyone running deals. So some of our brands that did not run deals yesterday did not see an increase in sales just from the traffic. So anyone who's running deals, discounts, coupons, we recommend putting higher budgets and higher bids behind your main keywords, your top converting keywords, so you can really take advantage of that traffic. Prime Day is a great opportunity to improve your rank. People are ready to buy, ready to convert. There's a ton of traffic. So get your ads in front of the right customers. And if you're converting well, you can definitely improve rank on Prime Day.
So I'm more on the organic ranking side, more on the paid side, PPC. So I wanted to see, what do you see that works really well with organic ranking and PPC ranking?
I think lately we've been seeing a lot of improvements from like Google ad traffic or driving external traffic. That's been something that's done really well. I am like the least knowledgeable on like everything that could be done on that end, but those are the two variables we've heard from the most. And then on the ad side, it's really focusing on that conversion rate. So we've been pulling out like our keywords that we can see are converting much higher than average, and then just going really, really hard on top of search modifiers. Because if you're in the number one spot of product placement, it looks a lot like an organic placement. So if customers are converting on that ad, you're going to do really well at top of search. So we've been focusing on narrowing in on those keywords where we have the data that our customers are converting and then spending more.
I don't think like right now, using maybe Helium 10, CPR, trying to get ranked on the first page. Right now, the first page doesn't really mean too much because it seems like you really need to be on the top three spot. It's called top three, right? So, because you can't really see you after that. You got too many noise, like these high rated or these other carousels, Amazon Choice maybe, or some other carousels that kind of distracts everyone. So it seems like you really need to be really aggressive on your ranking in order to be inside the top three.
100%. I mean, back in the day, it was all about just getting on page one and you're fine. And now it's like we have brands that are page one. They've been dominating brands for 5 years, but they're having a 20% tacos still being on page one. Or they're seeing, you know, all of their volume decrease because top of search looks amazing. You have products with 10,000 reviews and great price points. Like, you're not going to compete at the bottom page.
So, Balbit, would you like to add on the Prime Day?
The Prime Day. I agree with Destiny in terms of not doing much. A lot of times when people try to chase that ad sale, they end up spending a lot of money. You can see that the ROI in regards to ads for Prime Day may not pay off. You might get that boost in ranking, but it's just going to be temporary. That will maybe only last 1 or 2 days, to be honest. What we suggest for our clients, and I think is better use of your money, is to rank before Prime Day. Try ranking when you know that Prime Day is in June or July. Try getting your organic ranking up before that time so that you have more exposure during Prime Day.
Yeah, I'll say one of the case studies we have from last Prime Day, CPCs were $40 for protein. Like, even if you have 100% acquisition rate, you're not going to be profitable. So, like, as with organic being so much more competitive, ads are that much more competitive too. You have a lot of big brands that are viewing it as a billboard and just driving up CPCs and paying for that traffic. And if you're not ready to play, like, you better be finding external traffic or different placements that you're okay with.
Like a while ago, like I always say 2015, you know, it's like really pretty easy to get ranked. Oh, no, actually just say to get sales. Right now, it's so much harder, right? Like you said, if you can't be a top three, it's hard for you to get sales. There's no real way to not do PPC, it seems like. Then, you know.
Yeah. And when CPCs were so low, like, I know that's kind of the clickbait headline for the last 2 years. Like, CPCs are so high. But if we compare the last 6 years, I mean, I would say we used to pay like 37 cents, 60 cents. And that means we had a lot of room for error. Like, people, we could have terrible listings, but who cares? The traffic's still converted properly. Now it's like, there's not a lot of room.
I remember when the ads platform started coming out, it was down to pennies for ad per click, you know? For France, Germany, other countries, it was so almost like zero. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah. So now if you make a mistake, it can be really expensive.
So with that said, like for the other brands, there's a message that just do not do anything for the Prime Day.
There's a few things that I would say we do. We typically like increase our product targeting. And if we have a competitive advantage over price point or anything like that, we'll run more product targeting because a lot of people are just looking for deals and discounts. So if we're running a deal and discount, I'm going to target a bunch of people's other listings. That way when they see my coupons, they'll click. DSP remarketing can be really big for Prime Day because you're getting all of that traffic. So you may want to serve them an ad post Prime Day, especially if, like Baldwin said, you're in a competitive category and you're organically ranked well. Like, why don't you retarget them when traffic's a lot cheaper than paying for them precisely on Prime Day with search? So there's those small things we can do, but at the end of the day, like, you need to rely on your brand being in a good position before Prime Day. Don't expect Prime Day to make any drastic changes to your brand.
So we get a lot of, because we do a lot of DSP and also PPC, right? So Amazon themselves comes and approaches us and tells us to teach our customers to spend more to get more visibility. Maybe Baldwin can talk about that. What do you think about that? Where they're telling you to spend more. Go ahead, Baldwin. Maybe you're probably better at explaining.
Yeah. So I mean, the whole business model for Amazon is make more money, right? So they're really trying to tell customer agencies to push for, you know, you got to spend more money. With every time I hear about a client going directly to Amazon to do their DSP, it was horrible results for them. It turns them off from DSP, to be honest. Yeah. And we do have meetings with them. They say, oh, you know, this is how you can improve. This is how you can spend more money, more top of the funnels, maybe some OTT.
Yeah. And
do a more holistic approach where you're doing spending money on every part of the funnel. And that to a small brand, there's no way they can do that. Even to a big brand, that's a big commitment.
Yeah, because you're typically locked in to really large budgets. So on our ends, we're really flexible. Something's not working, you turn it off and go somewhere else. But on DSP, specifically when ran by Amazon, you're very committed. And a lot of their goals and KPIs are based off new to brand and impression. So they'll come to you and say, hey, this campaign was incredibly successful. We had 1 million additional impressions. I'm like, well, none of them converted. So we see the same thing. And it's a business of cash flow. You're buying inventory. So when you're committing to these types of budgets, like, it can be detrimental. So I think that's why the education part is so important, like doing podcasts like this and just providing content. Because coming from Amazon, it sounds really cool. Like, Amazon's reaching out to me wanting me to do this. They should know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's not always in the brand's best interest.
Yeah. For us, we do bottom funnel up instead of top funnel down. Well. The real metric that I look at is for remarketing. When I start doing upper funnel things or middle of the funnel, is my remarketing growing? Because that's really the only way I know that the top of the funnel part of DSP actually works. And for those that don't know what top of the funnel or middle of the funnel, it's more of the awareness campaign where you're just driving traffic. You may see really low ROAS, but what you're really trying to do is get the people to view your listing so that your remarketing campaigns will target them off Amazon or even on Amazon.
Yeah. I think you just need to see overall efficiency increases. Your search should become a little bit more profitable because maybe you have more branded search coming your way. Like, it's just seeing the big picture of how all of these pieces work together rather than expecting a DSP campaign to perform the exact same as a search campaign. Like, you're spot on. You have campaigns you're willing to take a loss on because it's going to make this campaign perform better.
So, you know, our audience, a lot of the big sellers are here and probably listening to you right now, Destiny. Anything you can say that you don't normally talk about on podcast that you could talk about here? Any one thing that you think that you can share with our audience?
Nothing specific. I'm never good at your hack questions, but I will say Amazon's moving into a direction of seeing how the limited ad inventory on the platform is just becoming pay to play. So Amazon's kind of scrambling of how can we diversify this? How can we provide more off-platform traffic? How can we open up our Fire TV ad inventory to the regular audience? Same thing with influencers. For those who didn't see the Creator Connect platform, what it allows you to do is to directly connect with Amazon influencers. So there is a list of 300 influencers within there, and you can filter by category, say, hey, I want to see all 300 of your health and wellness influencers. You could then open up their rate card for TikTok, for Instagram, for Facebook, for Amazon Lives, and you could directly contact and pay them to run whatever type of influencer campaign. So Amazon's trying to take advantage of the social commerce that we're seeing across the board, that Instagram is doing, that TikTok's doing, and they're providing us more opportunities to do it through them. So every brand that's starting to see search get more expensive, find out a way to use UGC and start bridging the gap between external content, on-platform content, and start viewing your advertising from a cost per acquisition perspective. Like, I think that's the way of the future.
So, Howard, do you have any more questions before we start taking the audience questions?
I'm trying to think if we actually talked about this, but how would you, I know that remarketing side, right, where you can kind of help the DSP side with bringing in a lot of PPC, like high volume PPC traffic into the DSP remarketing. So do you see any other way to use P and PPC sponsored product ads together?
I think there's a few things for brands that have like a high repeat purchase rate. There's some really creative things you can do to only target new to brand customers and then like serve them a coupon. So if you know you have a really high lifetime value, you can come up with a custom creative only targeting people who viewed your number one competitor, and then you're going to give them a coupon. So that way you bring them into your funnel. And then once they love your brand, they're probably going to repeat purchase. So that type of granularity, I think, is what really needs to be pitched. You can also say, hey, I sell a car seat carrier, right? Like let's say something like that. You can say, hey, I want to target every single female between the ages of 20 and 35 that bought prenatals 8 months ago or 6 months ago. Because if they bought prenatals 6 months ago, they're pregnant and they're probably going to need a car seat carrier at some point. So I know that's nothing like very specific, but when people understand the power of DSP and that we have all of those audience insights, that's where it becomes an amazing opportunity. So I think those kind of things will be really cool and unique in the future.
Yeah, back in, I believe, October, when we were at the Mastermind together, we talked about weather targeting and temperature and stuff like that for a lot of the brands that have to do with weather or, you know, seasonal things. I think that was really powerful to hear from you, to understand, you know, we can target zip codes, we can target location, geolocations, and we have the audience to build on top of that. So that it's DSP, don't get me wrong, a lot of it is, I feel like, noise, but there's some tools that can be really helpful.
100%. Like, it kind of makes me laugh. Like, everyone's always like, Amazon doesn't give us customer data. We can't email customers. It's the worst thing ever. But I'm like, well, if you use DSP, you technically can find out a ton. You could creep on everyone's shopper habits. It's absolutely insane.
For the regarding weathering and targeting, are you talking about DSP itself having that function? Because we only know about the geo-targeting. Geo-targeting meaning based on zip code or IP sets. But I don't know, besides what PacView maybe talked about with AccuWeather about their database, is there any other thing regarding geo-target weathering that can be directly inside DSP?
The rollout, I believe, was native to Amazon because I believe they own one of the addresses, one of the weather addresses. So it was native within DSP. And the concept example they gave was like, hey, I have an umbrella. Let's serve it to this location who we know is about to see a really crazy storm. Something else, actually, that I'll mention that's super cool is Amazon's also releasing virtual product placements. So Amazon owns a ton of TVs, like TV channels, TV networks, and all these different types of things. So what they're rolling out is the ability to say, hey, let's take this number one TV show, put your product on the kitchen counter, like a virtual product. And it's post-production. So typically, if you wanted to partner with a TV network, you had to do it right before it was ever created. I think that's going to be super cool. And the billboard aspect is the best part. Your product showing up on a shelf, I'm kind of like, that's a brand awareness play. But you can actually take a fake billboard in this TV network and build your own billboard, which is cool.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, all this advertising stuff that Amazon's doing, like the influencer, the Creator Connect, and all the rest of it, looks like they're gonna try to dominate everything. You know, it looks really powerful.
Howard, can we partner on something for advertising in the metaverse?
Metaverse? I would like to do that.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
How are we going to make a metaverse, and how are we going to get that with Amazon e-commerce? And what I think it was me or Anthony was talking about. I think it was me, probably. I was saying, if you buy something on Amazon, you'll get it in the metaverse, you know?
Have
a product that you buy one, and then you get an email saying, here's your metaverse, whatever product that you bought on Amazon. So you take that into your metaverse as a shoe or a metaverse shoe or something like that.
Yes. They're already playing with AR. So we know they're going to do VR in some type of way. Like, it's going to be so cool.
I'm actually using an app. I don't know if I want to. Oh, well. It's a Web 3.0. Like, it's called Step In, where you just walk around and then you get paid by coins. So, that's by their coins. So it's kind of dropping now like everything else, but it's kind of interesting. I'm trying to immerse myself into the metaverse or the Web 3.0 so I can have more knowledge, or what I can think of some ideas of how we can utilize this. We actually have Anthony Lee coming on a little later for a podcast. He's going to be talking about how we're going to, I didn't want to say it before, but how we're going to use crypto or the NFT or the metaverse, how are we gonna have that connect with the e-commerce?
Yeah, I think there's huge opportunity there.
Let's see how we can connect and partner up. Yes. Let's see what there is we could do. I think there was another question. You know how there's a lot of people, a lot of big sellers, or a lot of people saying about this back a year ago maybe, but I'm not sure about now because I wasn't looking into it too much. But maybe Bowen or Destiny knows about. How about this attribution on DSP? Is the attribution on DSP still going back to PPC side? So you're getting double attribution.
Not if you appropriately set up your campaigns. If you're running super, super broad campaigns, I think view through attribution can definitely add quite a few complexities. And we're even seeing it on a sponsored display side. Sponsored display has view CPMs, which means you're charged for every 1,000 impressions. What people don't realize is Amazon's charging you based off 1 second of a view. So think about how many times you scroll a product detail page and see an ad for 1 second, and then you go and buy that product 5 days later, and it's being attributed to that ad, even though you probably would have bought it organically. So I think attribution across the board is a really, really complex area of Amazon. But on the DSP side, like, I'd like to hear Baldwin's response, because I know you're definitely more into DSP than I am. But if you set up your line items the right way, you can make sure you're only targeting people who have never viewed your listing before. And that incrementality can help segment your attribution quite a bit.
Yeah, I believe the only real way to segment on Amazon platform and off Amazon platform is to just target off Amazon platform. That's the only way that you really know that your attribution is attributing to a legitimate sale that you got the client to get to buy your product on the customer ID. But what DSP says is, as long as we have the merchant token associated to the DSP account that's on the Amazon merchant side, they can separate and they know where the traffic is coming from. And that's where Amazon Marketing Cloud is more important to the DSP user, because you can run queries on where everything is flowing from. If you show an ad outside of Amazon, it can track all of the ads that they click on to get to your product page. So this is what Amazon says. I don't know if I truly can trust what they say, but this is what they say.
It's in their favor to have all of our ad performance look better. So take that as you will.
Destiny, are you looking into the Amazon cloud?
Yeah, we're looking a bit into AMC. We're not diving in too deep because there's only so many of our brands that are spending enough money to really move up and off platform where it starts making a big enough difference. So from like a scalability perspective, some of our largest brands are diving into it. We're having to help support a lot of that. they're releasing a lot of really cool things in that end, just really, really investing in giving us more data. I think they recently partnered with like IRA to start getting retail data pulled into there as well, which will be nice for anyone that's in stores and on ads. And then I believe they're also finally giving us what hourly data that's like actual push data, which will be really nice. So tiny things that are like trying to get, but not fully getting on the AMC side.
Yeah, Amazon actually has another, so they're trying to come out with all these other things. Like they have another thing called Seismic. Mm-hmm. Seismic is actually the one that actually, if you run like Facebook ads, Google ads and stuff like that, you actually can track that stuff on Seismic. And it's, I don't really, because I don't know anyone that has it right now, but this is supposedly what I was told, that this is where you track your attributions on other ad platforms.
You know what makes it hard is, like we talked about earlier, all the new rollouts on the ad strategy side that we have to keep up with. Amazon operates in a very similar fashion on the ad tech side. So it's really kind of difficult because for like our agencies to invest fully into something like AMC, it's a pretty big upfront investment to really dive in, learn, and set up the fundamentals for managing it. And then in 3 months, the platform can go away or it can completely change. And I think that from a development standpoint, we're in a position of having to pay those costs and pass it on to our brands for that additional data set. So I think that's something that we struggle with on our end, with keeping up on all the new shiny things.
Yeah.
I mean, the new shiny things, like for other big software vendor, you know, like those, they seem like they're offering it a lot and they're built into their system and stuff. Yeah. So we'll see. But, you know, I think it's still a little time before we really need to go into Amazon Cloud now, because I think it's too much noise now, or at least like you said, Get the fundamentals down first. Get make sure you don't just jump onto everything. So you got to get something grounded.
Yeah, and pay for that.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of investment for the programmers and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start some few questions from the audience.
What do you think about budget and cost budget for page one or launch in average? Not going to be a clear answer anywhere for this, I don't think, but one of the things that we recommend doing is just create a fake sponsored product campaign and then type in the keywords you're wanting to bid on and see how expensive they are. Your suggested bids are going to be probably off because it's an average of every placement on the page. It's not just top of search. It's not just the product detail page. But protein, for example, I think if you go on right now, we'll show you an $11 CPC. Toothpaste is a $14 CPC. So you can at least know what type of category you're playing in and then make assumptions. Your actual budget is really going to depend on your conversion rate, though. You convert like crap, you're going to need a lot more budget to drive a lot more traffic. So I don't have a great answer. Oh, can I hear? I could dive into this, but I really want to hear your opinion on day parting.
For us, day parting currently, what I feel is we don't have as much information as we can to effectively do deep learning.
Yeah.
As much as people say, oh, you know, we got orders at this time, you know, I don't think there's a effective way to really do deep learning for PPC on Amazon.
I could not agree more. Like, there's two concepts I tell people is, one, it is a pay-per-click model. Someone clicks at 3 a.m., they're interested in your products. If they click at 9 p.m., they're interested in your product. The reason day parting is complex for agencies is because most people don't buy right after clicking. Most people click and then add to cart and then buy 4 to 5 days later. So when someone comes to me and they're like, no one buys my product on Sunday, I'm like, well, how do you know that they're not clicking on Sunday but buying your product on Wednesday? I'm like, well, there's not a great answer for that. And then you throw an attribution, which is another complexity. The only time I am a fan of day parting is like, if you only have a $100,000 budget a month and you are running out of budget every morning because it's so expensive because everyone's bidding at the same time in the morning, I'm like, well, maybe test running your same ads at night when CPCs are cheaper. But at the end of the day, your conversion data is still like the key piece. And like Amazon just doesn't give us this data. So I always go revert to it's a pay-per-click model. people are clicking, they're interested in buying. That's all Amazon boils down to.
Actually, we kind of like day parters because that means that during the night, we get cheaper CPC.
Yes, yes. It averages out in our favor. What do you think about ratio ads to organic? SP, SB, and DSP. This is something that I think has changed quite a bit. I would say it used to be, you know, 70% organic, 30% of ad sales was really, really healthy. Nowadays, we see closer to 50-50. Anyone who has more in ads typically means you're over leveraged in ads and you need to improve your organic ranking. On the taco side, we used to see like 5-8% was really, really healthy. Nowadays, we see more of like 10-12% being average. In terms of SP, SB, and SD, 75-80% of all sales still come from sponsored ads because they have more ad inventory than any other ad type. 15-20% sponsored brands, the rest is sponsored display. And then DSP budgets, I'll say, depends on your goals. There's just a lot of flexibility there. Some people recommend doing 50% what you do on search, but it also depends on number of ASINs, how up the funnel you're going. So can't really answer DSP.
Before another question, I'm really interested in like how you handle like what kind of things that, you know, like a lot of our audience aren't like the big brands, right? So what are the big brands doing right now with the ads?
Pushing a lot of creatives, I think, is one of the biggest things because that gives them, the big private label sellers especially, have a competitive advantage because like someone like Lego needs to have a professional graphic design team that is going to create an asset that needs to go through legal. It needs to go through all their marketing assets. It takes forever to do one image per sponsor brand ad. The large brands that are really kicking ass are the ones that are investing in their creatives. They're launching like custom image on sponsored ads. They're really creating a ton of video assets. They're doing Amazon posts because the more Amazon posts you have, the more followers you get. The more followers you get, the bigger your email list. And the email customer engagement is kind of crap right now, but it's another one of those things that Amazon's trying to invest in. So we know they care about brands, so focus on brand.
Yeah, we track Amazon posts and the sales that it attributes, and we see pretty good results. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not look like it, but you can actually, you're like getting a lot of placement inside your own and your competitors' listings.
Especially since it's free. That's the biggest thing.
Like you said, it's very important for even Facebook and other media buying. It's all about the creatives.
Yeah.
As
everything gets more expensive, like it's always the traffic versus conversion date, but as everything gets more expensive, like if you're paying $4 a click and they're not buying your product, you need to invest in your creatives. Ooh. How would you tune your PPC campaigns after being out of stock for 2 weeks? We typically just increase bids and budgets and try to drive a lot of traffic, in all honesty. I don't really have anything great for that other than you typically lost a lot of rank and you're in this position of just having to play catch up. So that's kind of what we do. If you don't have the money to spend on that, then just turn everything on again and hope for the best. You take on category change. What if 6 sellers out of 10 are from other category, but organically ranked in top 10, even with low daily sales rating and reviews? I don't have a good answer for this. I think this is more of a Howard answer, maybe.
Let me see. Hold on. Is Amazon considered those keywords more relative to others? Trying to understand the question more. But
I think this is to do with your relativity score on ASINs. Generally, I don't see other products. Really, if it doesn't go into your category, they're not going to show up. I'm not sure what this is pertaining to in terms of.
Yeah. Not a lot of help. Is that true that UK have 2 to 3 main keywords for most of products? We manage quite a few UK brands, and I would say not necessarily. I think that 80-20 applies to almost all of our business. 20% of your keywords are probably going to drive 80% of your volume, so that's basic. But there's so much keyword research you can do everywhere. Like, there's so many different ways a customer could type in something and be led to your product. So the easiest way to test is to find a ton of keywords and bid on them. And if it's true, 300 of your keywords are not going to get any clicks or sales. If it's false, you're going to collect data and be able to optimize towards that. But this is a super easy split test on your end without harming anything. Upload 30 keywords and see what gets a click.
Okay, so we have like 5 more minutes left. So to make the ending interesting of the session, we do the fun fact. So I would like to know that what is the most funniest thing happened to you in the Amazon space?
In the Amazon space?
Yeah, like the advertising, anything that happened to you and you thought that, okay, this is funny.
One of the best things that happened was going to Howard's event in Vegas and getting to go to Omnia. I don't know if it's like funny as in like, haha, but it was like one of the best things in the space.
Really?
Yes.
But you go to a lot of events.
I do go to a lot of events, but like in Vegas for Prosper, there's just so many people and it's a lot. And I don't want to say it's diluted because that can be really good. But what I really valued about yours is those like such close relationships. And like Omnia was such a great time because I could hang out with just everyone without being like, wow, I need to talk to this person, this person, this person. And I mean, we had champagne come from the ceiling on a little like, you can't beat that. Like, it was amazing.
And also we had our little logos and our name of our Lee Seller Society are coming out from the signs.
Yes. You like walk into this massive club and it's like logos, it's for us, welcome everyone. That was top notch, one of the coolest things.
Yeah. Well, you should. Next time I take you to a castle.
Yes, I heard amazing things. Allie was showing me pictures. You guys had horses brought in at the castle?
I think they live there.
Okay, I really 100% assumed you were like, bring these horses in for the magic of the event.
Yeah, this is like a crazy castle. It's actually like a historical monument or like historical monument or something because Henry V used to live there or like kind of had like it's actually a royal castle family members. They go hunting on the castle and they stay there, they live there, and they go like hunting for wolves or something like that.
Did you ever once feel haunted? Because that was my concern.
My wife actually went to some part of a castle where no one was there, and I think Ashley was there, right, Bowen? Yeah. Did she tell you about that? I don't really know the details, but they went in and it was dark, right? And it was, I'm not sure. I think they opened the door and it looks like there's a cave or something like that, Bowen. Is that right?
Yeah, they went to, like, my wife and Howard's wife, they went exploring. They kind of went into this, like, it's like built into, it used to be a quarry, and it's like the building is built into the side of the mountain. And they just went in. It looked pretty cool in the pictures. I don't, in terms of haunting, I don't know.
So this is what she told me. She went in there. All of a sudden, she was kind of really scared. All of a sudden, this never happened to her in her whole life. Siri on her phone, or not her iPhone, started talking.
I would be like, I'm out. I'm done.
Like crazy. Like with, I think with Ashley, which is Bowen's wife, I'm like, she was like telling me. So she says it never happened in her whole life. And then all of a sudden, when she says like Siri started talking.
No, that is okay. So everyone is scared of the dark. Like, I don't think anyone can say they're not slightly scared of the dark. So could you imagine being in a pitch black room? You're already like on edge and your phone starts talking to you. I would have been out. No way.
Yeah, I you know, I'm a wuss. I'd be scared. I'd be jumping out there before my wife.
Yes. Awesome. Well, this has been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people had fun. It seems like we had like these campfires and castle fires. And then we were sitting there smoking cigars, Kevin King and Norm. And
I have a question.
Yes.
How good was George's bartending skills? Like, would you tip him?
Actually, I was pretty busy working. I tried to have fun. I actually was really drunk during my event because I was worried. And I gotta make sure I wake up on time.
Yes, yes.
Like the last mastermind in I guess it was Mexico with them. I actually didn't care. I was like drinking a lot more and then having fun because I would say, good thing it's not my mastermind. I could do it. And then Tim's like, yeah, we know. But regarding talking about George's bartending skills, I don't know. I heard it was pretty good. Actually, I did. I did take one drink from him. I thought it was pretty good. It didn't like it wasn't bad or anything. So it was passing.
I'll give him that then.
Okay, any last questions, guys?
Okay, I think that's it. And thank you so much, Destiny, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time. Just check us out on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place. Add me on Facebook or go to betterams.com.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye. Thank you.
Do you want your product seen by more buyers on Amazon, Etsy, and other marketplaces? Do you want to get more traffic, make more sales, and scale your brand? Welcome to the Signalytics Podcast, Signal Code Unlocked, where we discuss what signals are needed to send to your customers, to the algorithms, to the ad platforms, in order to get your product seen, converting, and profiting fast. With your host, former top 50 seller on all of Amazon, the Professor Howard Tai. This is the Signalytics Podcast. Signal Code Unlocked.